This is episode 588 on the Hidden Why podcast with Corinne Zupko.
Welcome to the Hidden Why's 30-minute power segment. I am passionate about creating a lifestyle that minimizes suffering and regret. The purpose of life is not simply to survive, but to thrive, and I believe we do that by creating a life with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. Each week, I will be delivering a 30-minute conversation with a guest expert on a topic that they are knowledgeable and passionate about, with the purpose to inspire and educate us all. I don't have all the answers. I'm simply trying to figure life out. And through greater awareness and understanding, I can put into practice what I learn to further my life's progression. I can't give you your life's map. I can't show you the way, but I can assist you in discovering your why. I can help you define your life's compass to guide you purposefully to act on and pursue your life's desires. And from there, watch happiness ensue. My guests are the experts. They are the people I learn from. They provide the inspiration, education, and methodology that we can all benefit from in better navigating the ultimate life. Without further ado, let the show begin.
Today's feature guest is Corinne Zupko. The topic is anxiety. Corinne is the author of From Anxiety to Love. As a licensed counsellor and keynote speaker, she has helped thousands of individuals through her one-on-one counselling, weekly meditation classes for corporations, and the largest virtual conference of ACIM in the world through the organisation Miracle Share International, which she co-founded. She lives in New Jersey. You can visit her online at fromanxietytolove.com. And check out her new book. The links will be in the show notes for this episode, episode 588. Please enjoy this conversation with Corinne on anxiety. Hey, Corinne, welcome to the Hidden Why podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome to have you too. How's the day going?
The day is going great. I just came inside from putting away my pet chickens into their run while I'm in here. I like to know that they're safe out there and they love their freedom. So, of course, they didn't want to go in, but it's been a great day.
Chooks are amazing for going back to their home, aren't they?
They are. Every night they know exactly where to go and, you know, they know it's their little safe spot and they're just so cute and so fluffy. It's so fun. Wow.
I had a relative, actually, my wife's grandparents had a chook farm, and they used to have four chook pens with thousands of chickens, and they'd have the chook pens color-coded, so red, blue, green, yellow, and each night the chooks would go exactly into their color-coded pen.
Wow.
So amazing, eh?
They know where home is.
Smart animals, and just so lovely. But look, that's not what you're not here for today. We're here to talk about your book, From Anxiety to Love. A radical approach for letting go of fear and finding lasting peace. So the topic today I want to talk about is obviously anxiety. And the first question I want to ask you is why is this topic so important to you?
Oh, that's a great question. It is so, so important to me because I know that I was not the only one in the world who struggled with debilitating anxiety and panic attacks and fears. There's a statistic that 40 million Americans struggle with anxiety disorders. I don't know what those stats are worldwide or in other countries. I actually think that number is low. I think that anxiety is a very common feeling, especially in this day and age, that many of us experience. And so this is such an important topic to me because I've been able to experience so much healing in this area that I can't keep the transformation that I've gone through. I can't help but share it. I can't keep it in.
That's awesome. Yeah. Alarming sort of figures. What do you mean by debilitating anxiety?
So I like to think of anxiety as on a continuum. At the low end of the continuum are the sort of everyday anxieties and fears or worries that we might all have that sort of come and go and pass by. But then at the high end of the continuum, that's where I like to think about anxiety being debilitating in that folks might experience panic attacks. They might be so overcome with worry that they feel they can't function. In my experience, there were times when I couldn't get off the couch. It was hard for me to eat because my stomach was in such a spasm. So the debilitating piece really is when anxiety gets in the way of us living our lives and being able to function.
Right. Okay. Yeah, cool. I've never experienced anxiety at that level. I certainly have anxiety. I think most people do deal with anxiety all the time. But you're right, it is a global issue. It's up there with depression, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They go hand in hand many times.
So how would you define anxiety?
Anxiety is a fear of the unknown. Anxiety is worry. Psychologists distinguish between fear and anxiety, with fear being a response to something real and anxiety being a response to something, you know, imagined or not real, not present. Okay. But I tend to think of both fear and anxiety as in the same category of just different forms of fear and fears that can really get in our way of living.
So anxiety is really, you know, that feeling, that emotion of fear that comes about from something in the future that hasn't yet happened, whether real or not. Would that be fair statement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at times too, anxiety can actually be free floating, meaning it's not attached to anything. There's no identifiable worry or concern or something about the future. It's just more an overwhelming feeling of just kind of dread and unease that just happens in the moment. And it doesn't seem to be really linked to anything. So it can show up that way as well.
How does that work?
Oh, it's no fun either.
I'm just trying to think of an experience that I've had where I've had that anxiety for no apparent reason, but I feel there must be a reason, you know?
Well, this is where we can start getting into the content of my book and the perspective on that there might not be at times an identifiable reason. My experience of those moments when I haven't been able to identify something, it's just this, you know, overwhelming physical sensation of feeling shaky and feeling really nervous and for no apparent reason. But when we start digging a little bit deeper from the approach that I'm teaching in my book, that experience of anxiety or fear can actually be coming from a deep place within our minds that has sort of identified itself as separate from love, as separate from one another, as separate from spirit, from our source. So when we start looking at it from that angle in terms of an unconscious, you know, anxiety and unconscious fear being linked to a belief that we are separate from our source, a spiritual source, that can be an explanation as to why sometimes there are experiences of free-floating anxiety, which that was my experience, at least, in working with it and trying to get to the root of where this free-floating anxiety was coming from.
Free-floating anxiety, cool. Is it something from our unconscious self that brings it about, do you think?
I do think so. I think that unconsciously, or at times consciously, I believe that we do hold a belief in our minds that we are limited to these separate bodies and to, you know, a separate sense of identity from our source, from love with a capital L. Some folks might be comfortable with the word God, some folks might not be, but that unconscious belief in our minds that we've separated, I believe, can fuel a lot of our anxieties and fears.
Yeah, okay. I like how you guys use folk in your language. It's really awesome. okay, so that's really interesting. In a deeper sort of, survival level or mammalic level, we have this need to survive, right, as humans. Now, fear is there for a reason, I believe. I think it's there to help us stop harm and injury to ourselves. It's there to prevent us from us moving towards that level of survival that we're after. How does anxiety play a role in that?
That's a great question. So definitely on this level of this world, fear has been adaptive, right? It's how we've come to survive and dominate the planet. Our ancestors remembered to stay away from the cliff and stay away from Tyrannosaurus Rex and the snake. That is where we can kind of conceptualize fear as a response to things that we need to be attuned to. Anxiety is what keeps us up at night. Anxiety is when we turn on the switch in our minds of, oh, well, what if that tiger or that, you know, saber-toothed tiger comes tomorrow? You know, that starts to be the anxiety, is that anticipation factor that we're discussing. So that's sort of how I see that.
Okay. That's really interesting. So anxiety is more, I mean, it seems like it's all actually all about the future situations or circumstances that we might be facing, or at least thinking that we might be facing. Has it got anything to do with the past that we've experienced? I think it must have a big part to play, but yeah, how do you explain that?
It can. So, you know, anxiety in relationship to the past, many of us have gone through traumas. Many of us have gone through really challenging, painful experiences. And when we go through those experiences, we can take part of that with us into the present. And so our anxiety might be linked from something that we've gone through and have not yet come to terms with. We haven't yet healed. So for instance, one example that I can give is that I used to have a phobia of getting needles and getting, you know, blood drawn, because there was a time, one time when I was having a very, very minor, just in the doctor's office, very minor little surgical procedure, and I almost passed out. And so after that, you know, having had that experience, it freaked me out. So every other time in the future when I had to do anything that, you know, went close to that, I'd have that same sort of anxiety response, that same sort of, you know, panicky response about, you know, getting lab work done or something like that. So it can definitely play a role based on our past experience as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think the past experience is our current state of conditioning, and it's how we sort of view the world at the moment. So certainly if that past experience has caused some sort of level of stress in our system, we're certainly going to relate that to future things that might be occurring as well, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's a fascinating field, and obviously a big one that affects many people. What do you think is the main cause for anxiety in our modern world? Because a lot of people suffer with it and probably find it difficult to deal with and handle. What do you see as the main cause in this day and age?
I feel like there's not necessarily just one main cause, but one that comes to mind is the pace at which our world moves. We, at least here in the States, have a very, very fast-paced day and week. We're always on the go. I feel that with technology, that's even sped things up for us even more. So we have information coming at us through email and through, you know, texting and all these different areas, where now if we go home after a day of work, we might check our email and see all this, you know, work that we still have to do coming in through emails or through text. And so we can literally be working and on the go all of the time. And so I feel like that sort of breeds this inattentive, this scattered feeling in our minds where we feel pulled in many, many different directions. Mm. And that also contributes to this sense of, you know, not feeling at ease, not feeling grounded. So I feel like this sort of culture of doing, of needing to achieve, of needing to, you know, keep busy and always have our to-do list and be checking things off of our to-do list, I feel like this is one factor in our modern age that is not helping us.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Things are moving fast and changes seems to happen more and more. And, you know, just absolutely dealing with change is one of the reasons why a lot of people suffer anxiety, because things are more comfortable when things aren't changing, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
With that rapid pace of things moving, I mean, is that because we have all these higher set expectations on us and how we think we should be living our life, do you think?
I do. I think that we do have expectations that there's a psychologist by the name of Albert Ellis, and one of the very funny things that he used to say is that we should on ourselves all the time, meaning I should, you know, be doing this, I should be doing that.
Yeah.
We do put a lot of pressure. We should on ourselves. We do a lot of pressure. We put a lot of self-imposed pressure on ourselves to always feeling like we need to be busy or to be achieving to establish our worth, to find our, you know, meaning in life, our purpose. And those shoulds, that self-talk isn't helping us either, because it takes us out of the now. It takes us out of the moment.
Yeah, I should on myself all the time. It's disgusting. I like it. Yeah, but that's true. Like, I mean, I've got all these, you know, things that I want to do, and yeah, I suppose personal expectations. And I feel I've, you know, at least removed external expectations for my life, and that used to be a big impact on how well I was living my life is the external expectations, and perhaps there's a difference there from internal expectations and external expectations, but What are your thoughts on that? Because external expectations are driven by the world. Internal expectations are something that we feel we need to meet or achieve. And that's driven from within.
Yeah, I think that anxiety can come from both places. If we're in a setting where the external expectations are very high and we feel like we constantly need to be on and aware of trying to meet those, that can definitely bring about stress. But add on to that the internal expectations of needing to be quote unquote perfect. I think many of us struggle with this idea that we have to, be perfect and do everything right. And that is just adding on another layer of stress. It's adding on a whole additional layer of potential anxiety. So I do think that sort of separating out what are the external expectations and what additional things am I putting on myself can be one step in terms of kind of sorting through that and trying to release some of those expectations.
So really, and that's, I think we're heading into the practices and the ways that we can manage anxiety and I guess more information can be found in your book as well. But certainly it's one that, takes awareness, takes time to really just reflect on your life and look at those expectations, both internal, external, that you're placing in yourself. And sometimes you just got to slap yourself in the face and go, hang on, is this really that necessary? I feel a big part of it comes from due to our amazing connectivity that we've got. We're all surrounded by social media. We can connect with people on the other side of the world. We can see what everyone else is doing. And that, I think, sort of fills this deep, deep hole of expectations that we need to try and meet. And, if we're not meeting that, then that produces a lot of anxiety, like we're not enough.
Yeah, there's a quote by, I believe it was Eleanor Roosevelt, that comparison is the thief of joy. And I love that. It's so true, because with social media, we can constantly, people post their happy pictures and don't necessarily post the sad ones or the times that are difficult. And so, or maybe they do, but we get this idea that everybody else has it somehow better than we do, which then leads us to not feel good about our present state and to, maybe establish more internal expectations or self-induced types of pressures. And so I do agree with you very much that the social media piece is wonderful because we can connect with others all over, but it can also contribute to not feeling well inside.
Yeah, I think it's like all technology. I think technology is an amazing thing and it should be better than what it is as far as how well we can live our lives. But used in the wrong way, it can certainly be debilitating, as well. So I think, that's the same with, comparison and social media, comparing ourselves to another person. But I guess that comes down to, again, awareness of what you're doing and why you're doing it and how it does affect your life. But let's move forward. Let's talk about practices that we can use to manage anxiety in our life. So I guess a lot of those things, why anxiety is existent in the world is probably a good sort of segue into those practices. But where would you start with practices?
Great question. So there's two different broad approaches that I take in my book. One is an idea about mindfulness, which I'd like to talk about first. Yeah. And then the second piece is spirituality, which is a theme, a very large theme throughout my book. With mindfulness, it really becomes the practice of slowing down, the practice of starting to pay attention to one thing at a time with whatever millions of things we have to do throughout the day. Yeah. It's an intentional practice of slowing down and fully being present to whatever it is that's happening. So one of the examples that I like to give, rather than brushing your teeth at night and walking around your house and straightening up while you're brushing your teeth, just brush your teeth. Just be present to that experience of your toothbrush bristles and the taste of the toothpaste. Just slow down and just experience that one thing, or just wash the dishes. Just wash one dish at a time and be as present to that as you can. This slowing down, this mindful awareness, I believe is an antidote to anxiety. It's been extremely helpful for me. And it's the type of thing where we don't necessarily have to sit down and close our eyes to do a mindfulness meditation. Of course, there's enormous benefits to that, but we can start small with some of these practices that I just mentioned, which is doing one thing at a time and bringing our attention, bringing our awareness to that one particular thing. That's more of an informal practice of mindfulness. Even eating is considered a formal practice. So for folks listening, are you a fast eater? Do you just sit there and inhale your food really quickly or eat while you're doing something else? Experiment with just eating, closing the computer, not reading, and just being with your food and notice, what happens. You're probably going to notice urges to keep, doing something else and an urge to just kind of go off and, stay on that busy train or that hamster wheel of doing, as I like to call it. But this practice of mindfulness really is about slowing down. So for eating, just slowing down and tasting each bite or even just tasting one bite, we can start really small.
Absolutely. So, yeah. We just gobble down that food, don't we? And we sort of go, hang on, what? It's like when you drive and you go, did I just go through a red light or was it green? It's sort of like that experience. But when you actually slow down, like sometimes now I eat like an apple or a bit of fruit, and I just go, man, that's just an amazing sort of flavor. You really get to experience the joy that we have in front of us.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the car example with automatic pilot, because I believe that that's a very common experience for many of us. And just to give another example, it's like driving from point A to point B and having no recollection of the time in between. It's your automatic drive. You know how to get there, but you're just kind of tuned out the whole time.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is the opposite of that. So mindfulness is about being fully present to what is happening as it's happening. Mm. There was a study, I believe it was done in the UK. I don't remember the year, but researchers interviewed people who were responsible for car accidents. So I believe they actually went into hospitals and interviewed folks who were responsible for car accidents. And I don't remember the percentage, but it was a large percentage of folks were just distracted, not by their phones, not by the radio. They were simply distracted by their own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Just their own thoughts. So this is where we lack this. Well, we know how to be mindful. We know how to pay attention. We just have to exercise it, just like we would exercise any other muscle.
Yeah.
We just have to practice paying attention and being present to not be so distracted, because I'm sure we all know what it's like to talk to somebody and you know that they're not listening to you. You know that when you're talking to someone on the phone, you can tell they're distracted because they're doing something else, because it's, you can just tell they're not really there.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is the opposite. It's about being fully.
I do it in interviews all the time where I just suddenly tune out because something's just distracted my thought. And what I do, because this is an audio only interview, I've got your picture here, so I can actually just look at that picture and I just sort of stare. It might sound a bit freaky, but I stare at your picture. And that helps me really focus more on the conversation as well. To put me in the moment, I guess, because we do get distracted. Our thoughts take us away to various places throughout the day, throughout the moment. And that's a big issue. Now I would suggest, and this is just my thought, and I want you to elaborate on this, but walking around brushing your teeth at night, because I do it as well. That's one thing that you just sort of do automatically and you're not in that moment of just brushing your teeth. To try and get into that moment, it's great. And if you can practice that and do that with a lot of the activities that you're doing throughout the day, that's great. But I strongly believe that a meditation practice is the most powerful tool to help you better those practices. So it's going to help you absolutely be in the moment when you're brushing your teeth, because it's something that I've done for a few years now, meditated in most mornings, and it's just allowed me to be more present in the moment. And I can tell you, I'm a testament to what you're saying, is that it has helped my anxiety tenfold. Things just don't bother me as much anymore. I'm still ambitious. I still got drive. I still want to achieve things. But I sort of don't care as much about the result. I just want to enjoy that process, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't agree with you more that the actual formal meditation practice of sitting down and closing your eyes, will definitely make that moment-to-moment informal mindfulness practice stronger. And that sitting period doesn't have to be very long. We can just start with even just a minute, 5 minutes, work up to 10 minutes, work up to 20 minutes. That sitting practice, we are literally changing our brains. Our neural circuits are wiring together and firing together, and we're creating, you know, new neural circuits and parts of the brain that are wired for much more peace and calm rather than this anxious, ongoing, you know, busy, distracted part.
Yeah. It's amazing. I'd sort of do 15, 20 minutes is my sort of standard, but I really want to move it up to 30 because I just find the power in there, but I'm still got that mindset that says, you know, if you're sitting here, you've got other things to do, you know, and it's still, you know, finding that balance. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone, you know, I'd encourage everyone to start it. So obviously that's a practice that you put into your day to help you with your anxiety, etc.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My preferred time, and we all have to find what works for us, is first thing when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
I, you know, sit up in bed or sometimes even just lie down in bed when I'm fully awake and practice focusing on my breathing, or in the case where, you know, one of the practices on the spiritual side of things that I talk about in the book is a practice of releasing, you know, releasing my expectations, my beliefs, my desires, and handing those things over to my inner guidance system. So I have a picture, actually a number of pictures on my bedroom wall that when I wake up, I see, and I go through this sort of process of just releasing any concern or anything I have coming up. I just sort of hand it over to the universe so I can stay in a place of trust that things will just work out as they're supposed to work out. So that's kind of like my morning ritual.
Yeah, nice. Okay. So definitely mindfulness, some sort of practice there people can adopt would be, you know, the mindfulness practice. Certainly just trying to be present in the moments and the activities that you're doing throughout the day, but sitting down and doing some meditation as well, making it sort of a more formalized practice will sort of, I suppose, seep into your daily activities as well from that formal practice. What other suggestions do you have? You mentioned something else just before about dealing with anxiety beyond mindfulness.
Yeah, so my book very much focuses on a spiritual remedy for anxiety. I feel that anxiety takes us out of our self. It distracts us from the truth of who we are, the love, you know, that is within all of us. And so the practices that I talk about in my book very much have to do with starting to get out of the small self and into our capital S self. So embracing our true nature, which I believe is love. I believe that love is what, you know, connects us. It's what we're made of. So one of the practices that I talk about in the book is starting to distinguish between two thought systems in our mind. We have a fearful thought system, which I call the ego in the book, and this is from the spiritual text called A Course in Miracles. So ego is this fearful voice in our mind, and spirit, or your inner guidance system, or what I call your inner therapist in your mind, is the voice of love. It's the part of our mind that remembers our truth. It remembers the love about us. So we can learn through practice to get in touch with this loving voice and listen to it rather than listening to the fearful voice.
Okay, interesting. That could be a whole nother segment for a show, but about ego and love. So do you feel ego is very much fear-driven?
100%, yes.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that's giving me a good thought to go away with today. I'd love to bring you back on and talk about that as well, like ego.
Sure.
And love, I suppose. Love kind of freaks a lot of people out when they hear love. Oh, it sounds a bit, you know, hippie and spiritual, and I get that. But there's probably a lot of power in what you've got to share there. So, look, I want to encourage people to go out and pick up your book. I'm going to put a link in the show notes here. So people can pick it up. So it's From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. Lasting peace, I think, is what we all want. We all want this deeper sense of joy in our lives, and why not? That's what we deserve. And I think it is achievable. So hopefully, Corinne, you share many practices that can help people get there as well in the book.
Definitely.
Now, you've also got a website as well, which I think is fromanxietytolove.com.
That's it.
Got it. Nailed it. Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Any final words?
Thank you so much. And one of the sayings that I have in the book is the light in you is too bright to fail. So if you feel like you are just down and out with anxiety, the light in you is too bright to fail. I committed myself to healing, and I know that you can too.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Nicely said. Guys, check it all out, thehiddenwhy.com. Reach out to Corinne as well. Let her know that you enjoyed the show or any thoughts that you might have. Leave your comments in the show notes and you can reach both of us directly through our websites as well. Thanks for tuning in today. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. Thank you for tuning in and listening to today's conversation. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've been able to take something away, something to help you create a more meaningful life, a life with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. Guys, if you love the content that I produce here at The Hidden Why, there are a few ways you can support me. Firstly, connect with me. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can connect with me online at thehiddenwhy.com or via social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. I would love to hear from you guys. I would love to connect with you. If you've got any thoughts, comments, feedback, suggestions, or anything at all that you'd like to ask me, you can reach me at thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com. While you're there, guys, make sure you subscribe to thehiddenwhy.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can be kept up to date with all the new episodes and happenings here at The Hidden Why. If you love what you heard in this episode, guys, or any of the others, please share the love. Share it with your family, friends, and anyone you think that might get some value. If you haven't already done so, you can also leave me a review on iTunes. Simply head over to iTunes, type in The Hidden Why, click the ratings and reviews button, and leave me a short message plus a 1 to 5 star rating. It helps me reach more people. Once again, guys, I appreciate the time you've taken out of your day to support my show. Until next time, you know what to do. Breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why Podcast. My name is Liam Undlesey. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.